YTTP Studios presents To The People Podcast.
This podcast is powered by Youth To The People. We make pro-grade vegan, cruelty-free skincare for all genders, skin tones, passions, and people. And right here, every Sunday, you'll meet friends of the brand who are building stronger communities right where they are. I'm your host, Alyssa Shapiro, YTTP's Editorial and Special Projects Director. At YTTP, we talk a lot about what it means to dream beyond, what it means to push past our current reality to create a better future, one where no one gets left behind and no one is held back. When I talk to our co-founders, Greg Gonzalez and Joe Cloyes, about what it means to dream beyond, they tell me about their grandmother, Eva Friedrichs, a pioneer in American aesthetics. For her story, Joe Cloyes takes us back several decades.
My grandmother and grandfather actually owned hair salons in the 60s and 70s. In the early 70s, she really got into aesthetics and they started offering facials at their spa.
Eva and her then husband began importing a skincare line called Babor to salons and spas across the country. From there, Eva was inspired to continue her education in beauty, and particularly in the realm of skin health. So she started working with the state of California to develop a curriculum that was dedicated to aesthetics. She found herself at a time in her history when salons and suppliers were reluctant or straight up refused to work with women. So she decided to change up the game.
In the late 70s, my grandmother and grandfather got divorced. And when they were divorcing, the skincare company, it was called Babor, pulled the line because there wasn't a man in the business anymore. So she said, okay, I'll learn from that and I'll go develop my own skincare line.
And that's exactly what she did.
She was just a trailblazer and she didn't stop. When the company originally launched, it was called Images of Success because it was about making a really good skincare brand that the products truly worked, but it was also about her teaching women how to have their own careers.
Some of those women were Eva's own daughters. Here's Greg Gonzalez.
Our grandmother had 7 kids, 6 daughters. I believe 5 of the girls all became estheticians or cosmetologists, and my mom was one of them.
In 2015, when founding Youth To The People, Greg and Joe turned to their aunt Lori and Greg's mom Lisa for mentorship. These women have always been at the heart of the brand, and they still show up for this team. As we gear up for a general election in which record-breaking numbers of women are running for elected office, our YTTP family is feeling incredibly inspired to dream beyond. Now is our time to empower change and action. So for today's episode, I'm introducing you to 2 of our friends who are building up women and femmes, increasing our representation, and ensuring our equitable futures. Because when girls and women see ourselves represented, whether as business owners, elected leaders, or really in any capacity we dream of, it shows us that we can follow our dreams too. When we're lifting up those around us, we really only win. So I first want to introduce you to Deja Fox, activist and campaign strategist and just 20 years old.
I always say that in this work, you're never going to win every time. You're going to lose campaigns. It is what it is. You're going to lose elections. But if you invest in the people around you and you invest in how you do this work, creating really innovative strategies or empowering the leaders around you, you never really lose. And that's how I felt walking away from that campaign.
Deja's talking about Senator Kamala Harris's run for president, when Deja was the influencer and surrogate strategist and her youngest staffer at 19 years old.
There was some pieces of it that were funny, right? Like all of my coworkers going out to happy hour and me being like, well, I'm actually baby. There were parts that were scary, like dropping out of school for a year and moving to a city I'd never even been to. I had never been to Baltimore before I signed the lease to my apartment.
Still, Deja was happy to be there because she got to do work that made her feel incredibly proud.
There were parts of it that were exhilarating, like getting to see a campaign that I worked on with one of my best friends on the campaign come to life and see little girls take pictures with signs that this is what a president looks like or wear the t-shirt myself. And there were parts that were heartbreaking, like watching her drop out of the race and knowing that, I had so much of my life tied up in this work.
When Deja says her life is tied up in her work, she means it. If you're familiar with Deja, you might remember the time that she stood up to Senator Jeff Flake during a town hall meeting and went viral.
Jeff Flake. My name is Deja Fox, and I'm a 16-year-old from Tucson. I just want to state some facts. So I'm a young woman, and you're a middle-aged man. I'm a person of color, and you're white. I come from a background of poverty, and I didn't always have parents to guide me through life. You come from privilege. So I'm wondering, as a Planned Parenthood patient and someone who relies on Title X, who you are clearly not, why it's your right to take away my right to choose Planned Parenthood and to choose no copay birth control to access that. So if you can explain that to me, I would appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I've had a lot of advantages that others haven't. And that what I want is to make sure that everyone can realize the American dream that all of us have been successful at. So that's what I'm trying to do, and that's why I support the policies that I support.
And if no copay birth control is helping me to be successful to reach for higher education, and Planned Parenthood is doing that as well, why would you deny me the American dream?
As Deja often says, her life has always been political.
I'm someone who was born in Tucson, Arizona. I'm a first-generation American. I was raised by a single mom. And all throughout my childhood, we struggled to cover our basics, right? It was things like food and housing that we were working paycheck to paycheck to make happen, right? And with that being said, I was someone who has relied in large part on government programs, whether that's food stamps or Section 8 housing, or Medicare, right? And programs like that are in large part decided by the people we elect. And so my access to food, shelter, health, education, right? I'm a product of public education. We're all directly tied to our elections.
Starting at age 15, Deja experienced what's called hidden homelessness. According to Youth On Their Own, 62,000 children are displaced and unaccompanied just in Arizona. Hidden homelessness doesn't necessarily mean that someone is sleeping in a park or a shelter, though.
It can look like everything from bouncing around from friends' houses to maybe, you know, living with extended family or with a significant other. It means not having a stable home of your own. And it's really, really pervasive.
When it comes to hidden homelessness, Deja says that often teachers and friends really have no idea what's going on.
But I was really fortunate that when I opened up about my experiences and my needs, my community was there to meet me. My guidance counselor was always there to help me through it. Or, you know, my boyfriend at the time and his family opened their doors to me. And it really showed me that when I opened up myself and my story, my communities would be there to catch me.
To Deja, the power of community is in abundance. When one person does well, so does the next.
When there's enough food at my house, there's enough food for my neighbor. When, you know, one person has some extra free time, they'll babysit. And it's about creating these communities where there is enough, where there's abundance, right? Because I've seen communities where there's not enough and they make it enough. And so when I think about the way that I'd like to interact with politics, right, it's about, at the end of the day, creating those kinds of communities where people can engage with each other in a way where they're not competing and where they feel that there's enough and there's enough to share and enough to go around and people are able to realize their full potential.
But the concept of community is really always changing because when we're kids, community refers to the people that we grow up around. But as we move through life, our communities are often the ones that we make for ourselves. One thing is for sure though, in the face of the pandemic, the way that we engage with our community has shifted. Deja is also the founder of Gen Z Girl Gang, an online community that champions sisterhood within Gen Z. For the past year and a half, long before the pandemic forced us to physically distance from one another, they've used social media as a tool to build community. Deja says that now, online community is more important than ever to many. And I think that's true.
It's how so many of us are interacting with our friends or meeting new people or networking. And so really at the crux of what we're doing, we are trying to redefine sisterhood for this new generation, a generation that's always had social media, and do it in a way that really pushes collaboration culture forward and do it in a way that builds unique digital strategies that only young people like us are thinking about. but also in a way that empowers the young people and the young women, particularly, and femmes who are already doing this work.
We often hear about how Gen Z are the leaders of tomorrow, but there are Gen Z activists and leaders making an essential difference now, and Gen Z Girl Gang works to amplify them.
Young women and femmes are already at the forefront of our movements, are already pushing change. And Gen Z Girl Gang works to highlight those folks, put them at the forefront, highlight their work, and use communities that we've already built digitally to actually create actionable change for those activists and change makers and thought leaders of our generation.
Deja is one of those change makers and thought leaders. Her activism really began at age 15 when she fought for sex education reform at the school board level. Whatever she's doing, Deja's mission is building power within people and creating communities that are defined by choice. Deja calls herself the future president of the United States of America, which I love. There's so much power in claiming what we want from life for ourselves.
In so many ways, my life has required me to dream. I've been the first to do a lot of things, whether it's the first in my family to go to college, right? Or the youngest staffer on Kamala Harris's campaign. I've always had to use my imagination to create the future I wanted for myself. But I also know that something that's incredibly important in our leaders and that I feel is lacking right now is imagination, is a sense of vision. But I know that the vision I have for this country is one that's characterized by choice, right? Where people have the choice not only if and when to have kids, but to raise them in communities where they're free from gun violence, police violence, family separation, where they have the choice to eat healthy foods, you know, the opportunity to live free from the fear of climate change. And so thinking about what it means to empower communities with choices so that way they can reach their own full potential is really the vision that I have.
Deja spoke of those plans to run for president as early as elementary school, but at a certain age, her confidence wore off.
That quickly in middle school and high school was not something that I was saying out loud, and maybe not even something I was, you know, putting out on the table. I think all too often we see this sort of ambition drop off, or at least our willingness to share that ambition drop off in those years in middle school and high school. There's so many questions about, am I good enough? Am I pretty enough? Am I smart enough? Right? All of these questions of comparing yourself to others and, you know, with social media, it's only gotten easier to do, only gotten easier to compare yourself.
It often seems like it's second nature for girls and women to question ourselves. And when we grow up, that undoubtedly impacts how we move through the world. But where does that doubt come from? To find out, I turned to Erin Los Cuchara, the founder of the nonprofit called She Should Run. It's a nonpartisan organization that encourages and mentors women to run for public office. Part of Erin's work involves understanding the barriers that women face, both externally and internally, and encouraging us to see ourselves as having leadership potential. She tells me that from a young age, girls are less likely to see themselves as elected leaders. In fact, when asked to name leaders, they're more likely to name boys and men. Here's Erin to explain.
Girls are less likely to take risks. They're afraid of failing. And that fear of failure is so big that, you know, and that hunger to, you know, strive for this perfection that's impossible to reach keeps girls and ultimately women out of these roles. The effect starts at a really young age. It starts with young girls being less likely to see themselves as elected leaders, you know, fast forward all the way to, you know, kind of that point when they're hitting puberty, they're less likely to raise their hand in class. They're more likely to name boys and men as the leader types. They're less likely to look at themselves for that. As a mother of two school-age daughters, something that I'm highly aware of is reinforcing in their narratives as much as possible that their voices matter. You know, the research is sad and true on this, which is, you know, we're more likely to push boys to do those things. We're more likely to talk to boys about them being future elected leaders. So I think one way, just starting at a young age, is if you have a girl in your life, is, you know, to make sure that she knows that her voice is not just worth something, but it's needed. You know, this is really why She Should Run is in the world is because still today, women are less likely than men to be encouraged and recruited to run for office at any level.
She Should Run is not your traditional political organization. They encourage women from all walks of life to consider a run for public office, and they really hold space for phases of exploration and consideration. Erin's team works with women who really care about their communities, but might not normally consider themselves viable politicians. These women want to improve our communities, our country, and our world, but they might not know where to start politically.
We just believe we cannot possibly have the smartest policies in this country if we're not tapping into the full talent pool. And that full talent pool is incredibly diverse, and we have a long way to go as an elected body from the local to the highest level to get there.
A lot of this work is about more than intention. It's really just not enough to say that you want women from all walks of life to run.
What's missed in that is you have to show up in the communities that you want to see serve, and you have to build trust. And that takes, you know, depth of programming, time, effort.
That means putting care into who represents their organization. And it also means acknowledging that different communities of women face unique barriers and being able to meet us where we are. Erin is no stranger to getting women elected to office. In 2004, she campaigned to elect a first-time female candidate for Missouri Secretary of State. It was the kickoff to a career of helping women into public office.
I got to see what it took to run for office as a woman who was running for the first time. She was incredible. She was a great candidate. She had lots of exposure in her life to politics, but she had never done it herself. So she really showed me and lit up in me this connection between, oh, these things that you can care about in life, what can happen, the good that can be done in the world if you move that into elected office. She came to the table with such a breadth of experience, and she had to, on every single occasion, state her experience over and over again. Folks know her bio, but there still were like, do you think you can handle this? Are you tough enough? Do you have the experience that it takes? And all of the answers were very simply yes. It really just blew my mind, some of the things that she experienced. And so that stuck with me. I was hooked just after that, and you know, very quickly started working with other candidates around the country. And I saw immediately these trends of how much women have to work. Luckily this has gotten a little better, but how much women have to work to prove themselves, to prove that they're qualified, when in fact they're often more qualified than their opponents. In her case, and in all the research, it is abundantly clear that you have to, as a woman, prove yourself in a way that men don't.
Erin's describing a pressure that most women have likely felt before. She says there's something going on within us that makes it difficult for women to put ourselves out there. First, we want to have all the answers. We want to make sure we're right. I've certainly talked myself out of applying for a job I wanted just because I didn't meet every single one of the qualifications on the listing.
The reality is you're never going to, and then just go for it. So we just have to push one another. When you see, when you have that woman in your life who's that get it done person, tell her that, wow, you know what? Wow, especially this year, especially in 2020, you look around and at all levels, and I would say especially at the local level, we are just desperate for leadership that is understanding and that is about problem solving. And these women are everywhere and they're not seeing it in themselves. So it is on all of us to play a role in encouraging women to step forward. We have a line that we often state to our community, and a lot of our resources kind of circle around it, which is, if you care, you're qualified. The She Should Run community is, you know, one that anyone can enter, even if they're not sure they want to run for office. And most women who are in our community aren't sure. And what they find is, you know, in what is now a fully virtual space, is access to courses and to readings and to webinars and to, you know, community happy hours that happen online. The thing that prior to She Should Run did not exist is this intentional space where it is okay to just explore curiosity about it. Having that permission to say, you know what? I care. I'm qualified. I may or may not choose to run for office, but I want to have that space to have that thought. And I want to feel like I can, and that I'm not obligated to make a decision one way or another. And that's the space that we're really intentional about giving women, because we know it matters. And we know that if we want to, you know, really flood the pipeline of women who are thinking about running for office in this country, we cannot start in the space of only the women who have already decided they're going to do it.
Did you hear that? If you care, you're qualified. There are over 500,000 elected offices in the US, and women are underrepresented at all levels. We make up over half of the US population, but less than one third of elected leadership. She Should Run is driven by the vision of seeing 250,000 women run for elected office by the year 2030. When women lead at every level of government, they are role models to girls and young women everywhere, and they normalize every type of woman being a leader. As Erin says, each of us has a role to play in encouraging women and femmes to step forward. When Deja started school at Columbia University, she started to again introduce herself to others as a future president. There is power in saying something out loud. It helps you to believe in it, and it helps others to believe in it too. Deja says that just being herself helps other people see their potential in her.
I think for me, this idea of being a role model, right? And like being a whole person and modeling what it looks like to be a woman who posts up in her bikini and does her makeup beautifully and hangs out and goes out to parties with friends, but is also an A-plus student and is on the dean's list at Columbia University and the first in her family to go to college and worked on a presidential campaign, that you can be all of these things, and you don't have to choose. Because I think that if we start to silo our lives off, right, and if young women like me who are successful in these different ways only show this one side of what it is to be a professional, and I say that in quotes, right, that traditional professionalism, then we send the signal to the young women out there who are going out with their friends, who are wearing bikinis and living their best lives, that they are not leaders, right? You don't give them the opportunity to see themselves in you. And so what I try to do is show up as the most whole and authentic version of me. So that way more women who live whole and authentic lives can see themselves in me and in the positions of leadership that I take up.
Seeing ourselves represented in leadership is vital for understanding the opportunities available for us. Here's Erin again.
It's really lifting up, you know, role models so that girls can see the path, you know, as you sort of move forward, you know, the systems that are in place, there is just this reality that it's really hard for women to break through. And so there's fewer examples to point to. So it's just this sort of cycle that, you know, that keeps repeating, that we have to disrupt. We have to normalize girls. We have to normalize women leading in all ways. And we'll get there. We will. We've made incredible strides, but we just, you know, I have to remind myself of this, remind my team, remind everybody. And I have friends who have to remind me of this regularly, which is this is such big societal change that's necessary to get there, and it's slow moving, but we just have to tick away at it every single day.
To the People Podcast is a production of YTTP Studios. You can learn more about us at youthtothepeople.com. Learn more about Gen Z Girl Gang at genzgirlgang.com and follow Deja online at Deja Fox. For information and to get involved with She Should Run, one of our voting partners, visit sheshouldrun.org. This episode was edited by Menazel, produced by myself and Menazel, and our theme music is by YTTP co-founder Greg Gonzalez and Hannah Fernando. We'll see you right here next week. Until then, go vote.